everybody, and welcome to Hanalyze This, the self-help podcast that just can't help itself. I am one of two Hannahs, Hannah Gelb, and my excellent friend, Sammy Davis, is a special guest today in lieu of Hannah Hart, who is being busy and important elsewhere. And my good friend Sammy has a PhD in marine ecology, and we talk about her journey in academia and how she kind of discovered mental health within that very stressful world. So it's very great and interesting. And we also talk a lot about Lord of the Rings. So enjoy. Oh my gosh. Sam, it is such a wonderful pleasure and gift to have you on Hanalyze This today. Let me just start by saying to everybody that Sammy Davis is my friend who gave me the Arwen necklace, okay, as a gift, and we had talked about it for 20 years.
Just about, I think 18, but really, too long.
But like, this last Christmas, she handed me a box and was like, I got you a gift. And I was like, aw. And I opened it. And it was the freaking Arwen necklace! So amazing!
Wasn't it amazing, too? Because it was in, like, some piece of crap, like, plastic wrap. Like, it was just straight from the UPS. And you were like, okay, here's a box of whatever. And then you open it, and it's, like, the Arwen necklace.
Oh, my God. It was so amazing. But, yes, so Sam, for you guys who are not aware, is my wonderful good friend who I met in high school. We've been friends for 20 years and we bonded over Lord of the Rings and nerdery. And we just wanted to like talk about being a millennial in crisis, I guess.
The topic du jour.
Sam, yes. Oh my God, you guys, all this time we've been sitting here and you've all been like, Sam's a normal person, huh? No, she is not. First of all, I should have introduced her as Dr. Sam. Because my friend Sam has a PhD in fucking ocean ecology and she's been in school our entire lives. Literally.
It's true.
Sam, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background in the academic world, as we say.
Okay. In the academic world.
How did you, because I remember when you were like, I like the ocean. I'm going to major in aquatic biology.
Yeah.
And then what kind of.
What the fuck happened to you?
I'm just so impressed because. As a person who does not plan or look ahead or do research of any kind, I was not aware what grad school was. And then you were like, I'm going to get a master's.
Yeah, actually.
Wait,
I never.
What did you go straight
I
to
went
your
straight
PhD?
To PhD. I never got a master's. And I agree.
Oh, dude.
I kind of agree with your friend that a master's depends on the circumstance. But I think a lot of masters are just like, kind of like sweatshop mills to like you pay and get a degree. And I don't know, like for a lot of fields, depends on the field, but you may not be able to even do anything with the master's. So you might have to just go kind of all the way to the PhD. So you might as well, you can start with a master's and then advance to a PhD. It kind of depends, but anyway, that's kind of into the weeds. But I think your question is like, how did I decide to do this? I'm like, why?
Yes, because that's such a huge decision.
It's such
and
a
scary
huge.
And-
yeah. So, I mean, just briefly, I like thought about wanting to do something to study the ocean. I mean, let's be real. I wanted to be a mermaid first. that was the first objective when I was 3. And I was like, I don't know how that's going to happen. And my mom did like a switcheroo and was like, why don't you be an oceanographer? And I was like, is it a mermaid? She's like, it's pretty close. You know, it's pretty close. So I was like, okay, I latched on to that. But then I kind of like, so I thought I wanted to do something studying the ocean since I was like, I don't know, 3 years old. But then I kind of abandoned the idea in some respect, or I kind of let it lay dormant and developed my other interests like Lord of the Rings. And yes. Like, you know, I just, in high school, I wasn't really particularly into sciences. I know we, you and I really had a hard time with chemistry in particular. remember those days? Like, we struggled with chemistry, and I think it was mostly because there was just no point. And I struggled with math and science because there was just, I couldn't see like a point of it in high school. Yeah. And I really, like, I loved a lot of our high school teachers, but I also had some real challenges with some. And because it was just, you know, we were just doing problems from a book to get ready to take a test at the end of the year. And it's just like, there's no way, nothing in that that's motivating. So I didn't actually, like, I think I took like the bare minimum of science and the bare minimum of math in high school, actually, which I tell students about that now. And they're like, what? And the students now, these poor children are taking APs when they're like in eighth grade or something. It's nuts.
Oh my God.
It's so crazy, but we don't have to get into that. I just feel like I want to say that I was interested in like working in some capacity related to the ocean, but I had no idea what it was. And I also wasn't really super, didn't have strong skills in math and science. And I didn't develop them because I was afraid of math and science, to be frank.
Well, who isn't, honestly?
I mean, and that's a sad thing because I think, well, I think it's like there's utility and there's like, if you can find a way that it would be interesting and applicable to stuff that you're interested in, then it's like, it's not as much of a problem. But when you're just doing math problems, like remember they would just be like, do the odd problems in the back of the book and turn them in on Tuesday. Like, what? Who is motivated by that? There's nothing. It's just like, solve these integrals.
I mean, we did Mount Carmel, Sun Devil Pride, Blue Ribbon School of Excellence. Not a terrible school, but definitely in the model of let's shovel these kids. Let's feed these kids through this meat grinder of public education, and hopefully a few will come out the other side. But not really like, how do we connect with these kids?
And I mean, how, like, one thing that I'm interested in, we'll talk about at the end, but like, how do we actually get the kids to like identify the stuff that they're interested in and like what motivates them instead of, you know, just giving them this, you have to take these classes, you have to do this so that you can go to college, so you can, you know, whatever. It's like all of those extrinsic motivators. And then, you know, then we get to the age, whatever we are now, Hannah, where we're just like, oh, wow, I'm not motivated by anything in this culture at all. I wonder how I can find self-motivation. Oh, God, it would have been wonderful if I learned those skills at any point right. in the past 20 years of school. Not that I'm bitter. Not that I'm bitter.
It's so, oh, my God, Sam, I love everything you're saying. And also, it's so amazing to me that you are saying you were afraid of math and science, because I remember you had to take like roughly as an aquatic bio major, you had to take like 400 chemistry classes. And like, I don't understand. I'm trying to think like why you had to do that and what the. What, like,
God.
Like, you're now like a lecturer.
Yeah.
Like, do you have to use chemistry?
So you're dancing politely around the issue that there's a lot of stuff that people take that you just aren't going to use. And I will say that general chemistry, there's some value in like having a basis for that. I do not use organic chemistry, and I did not during my like PhD research at all. And I literally, y'all have seen The Little Mermaid. I feel like to get through organic chemistry, like I signed a deal with like the devil, and I was just like, just get me out of this class. I will sacrifice my sanity, self-worth, whatever. Just make sure that I pass. I really had the bare minimum of math and science, and I got into a science major. So I got into the science major and I'm taking my like intro classes the first and second year, and they were horrible. Like I hated them. They're gigantic classes, just like steamrolling through huge amounts of information. Just memorize as much as you can, like take a test and just continue on. And it was so, so hard for me that I like contemplated changing my major like 5 times during my second year. And like, I didn't really know that I was going to finish the prerequisites to the major, let alone get a PhD at that point. Like, I was really like down on myself because it was
so what hard. How did you get, like, dang dude, how did you push through?
Like, yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that, for better or for worse, I have a high threshold for pain. Like, I was able to sort of, yeah, like I said, make deal with the devil. Like, for organic chemistry, it required basically just like hanging up all of my other interests and social life and hobbies on a shelf for like 6 weeks and just like doing nothing but practice problems. Fortunately, I had other friends who were kind of in that boat. So there was like camaraderie through the pain. But for me, it was over once I got into like ecology and evolution classes, because then I was just like, oh my gosh, this is actually like, I like this stuff. It's actually interesting to me. So it wasn't like the whole of college was a stressful, like painful gauntlet. It was like the first couple years were really, really bad. And then the second two were amazing because I was like doing classes that I liked and I had hands-on. I mean, the reason why I decided to do a PhD was because of those second years, I had a ton of hands-on experiences. Like, I had field-based classes. Like, I remember telling you and you were like, what? You get to go like camping and like go to the Monterey Bay Aquarium as like part of your class. And that was so different than like sitting in a lecture hall. And so that was for me like, oh, I like doing hands-on stuff. It's engaging. So I'm going to just continue in that direction because I'm enjoying it. I mean, it was that straightforward. It wasn't like a deep, like I have a 20-year plan kind of thing. It was like, I'm enjoying this. I get a chance to like have hands-on, like be outside and have hands-on application. And like, I went to French Polynesia after my junior year for like a research project. And it was just like, oh, I love traveling and like learning about the culture as well as the research at that point. And so I was like, well, I'll just keep going. And really, I have to say, I didn't do my due diligence to like think about doing a PhD. I just was like, hey, I like this. Why don't I keep going? You know, like, and that was really, that was the extent of the thought process, you know?
Oh, but Sam, I feel like you must be very gentle and kind with yourself because like what else would have happened?
Exactly.
Let's say you, because, you know, I'm kind of realizing like, I'm just so overthinking about stuff, even though I casually berate myself for never planning, or like, I'm just like, it doesn't make a difference to me. I could like research and plan for like 100 years and never do anything because I'll be like, well, there's still like
totally
probably a little more research I could do. Like, I just have to do it for sure. Or I'm not going to do it at
for
all.
Sure.
Which is like, I wish I was not that way, but
well, yeah.
But yeah, so Sam, I feel like that's great, dude. You were like, yeah. You're following your
interests. I have no regrets of that. I mean, I really don't. I just want to be clear, like, because I think a lot of the challenge with students and like that I talk to and work with now is they're like, I don't have it all figured out. Like, maybe I shouldn't do this or I shouldn't proceed because I haven't like thought about every single potential contingency. And I do not regret going to graduate school. I do not regret doing that because that was the right thing for me at the time. I was like, I'm liking this. Why don't I explore it, see where it goes, you know, and like stay open to it. So I'm glad you said that, Hannah, because I mean, being mean to myself, I am expert. I have a PhD in that. So I'm really glad that you said that.
Oh, no. Yeah. And it's like, if you like what, like a mad, like there is no life anyone out there where someone was like, well, luckily I thought about it and then I never had to regret anything in my entire life. Like, you just do things and then you're like, and then you reassess.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, am I still liking this? It's totally okay to like something and then not like it later. Yeah. Like, that's allowed.
It totally is.
You know?
It totally is.
Which I was not aware of until recently.
Yeah.
But so Sam, what did you end up focusing on in your PhD, Larry?
Well, I just want to put, there's like a caveat and like a little asterisk here. Before I tell you what I focus on, I just want to really make it clear that I struggled and suffered for like 2 years to figure out what to focus on. It was not like, for me, it was not a straightforward, oh yes, you know, I'm just sitting around and I just am hit with like a lightning bolt of inspiration and then, oh, boom, a research project. No, it was like, it was like a learning process that was a struggle and a challenge. And because it was a struggle and a challenge, I am proud of the end result, but it was not just something that was like super easy. So with that being said, because that's another thing I did not know when I was starting graduate school was that, you know, like I had, you know, started to read scientific papers and the way that they're written, you might think that that's how the thought process goes. Like you're just, you know, reading all of these things and you're like, oh my God, it just emerged to me this question that nobody has ever asked before. Mother of God, why don't I just develop a project and answer it? No, it's not like that. Like it's so much crazier than that. So, yeah. What I focused on for my PhD project, as I worked in French Polynesia on an island called Mo'orea, which is like right next to Tahiti, I studied this particular species of macroalgae called Turbinaria ornata, which looks like a little corn dog. It's a very beautiful, charismatic macroalgae. But it's...
Oh, yeah! Charismatic it's very, macroalgae! It's very charismatic,
I will say that. People who are listening are like, algae, really? I'm like, yes. But it really is detrimental to the coral recovering. So if it's there, it inhibits the coral recovering. So I was studying, what is it about this algae that makes it really effective in terms of taking over the reef or having this shift to reefs that are dominated by macroalgae instead of coral after these disturbances.
Wow. I'm just...
just taking it.
I have not been to a bio class in so long. This is so fascinating.
Yeah. It's a lot. It's a lot.
I'm going to pause so we could take a little break, but we shall come back with more facts about things and mental health in the academia world.
It's time for commercial area.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
And we are back.
Back on.
With my friend, Sansa. So, Sansa is getting a PhD for 7 years a mentally rejuvenating experience?
Great question, Anna. I just want to say yes and no. Okay. So it's mentally the hardest thing that I have ever done. It was mentally so challenging. However, I will say that like coming on the outside of it and like 5 years later, cause I finished 5 years ago, actually almost 6 years ago. Whoa. So I finished a while ago and have had more time to reflect. And I think graduate school for me was like a crucible. And so it put a lot of pressure on me. But I think the things that I realized and the way that I've been able to like think about things differently ultimately have been positive. But I have never experienced such mental lows as I did in graduate school, for sure.
Wow. And yeah, you know, Sam, what I love about our friendship is I feel like we sort of, as little teenagers, we went out into the world. And when we graduated high school, we went our separate ways. Mm-hmm. And we always stayed connected, but like we didn't really have any language about like depression or anxiety or like mental health. And then we just kind of had our own wonderful, horrible experiences that like So then, like, one day we just kind of, like, came back together and we're like, hey, so.
Shit's fucked.
Wow. Yeah. Like, you have a therapist.
Right? Yeah. You know, and it's funny because.
And I remember you saying, like, oh, my God, you being like, yeah, so anyways, here's what I did last week. I flew to New Zealand. I gave 3 presentations. I taught a few students. I had to work on a paper and then I had an exam. And, yeah, that's what I did. Tuesday through Friday, and I'd be like, what the fuck? I'm not exaggerating. I swear to God, Sam told me this.
Okay, yes. The locations were slightly different. But yeah, there's, I mean, it's like the fast-paced, high-stress environment that was like a graduate school, at least in my field, was... You know, it's like fun at first. It's novel and fun. And I think there's still fun aspects about it. But the stress, oh my gosh, high stress environment.
It's so frustrating too, because it's like it's that stress where you're like, this is not, I am not about to be eaten by a lion. And yet my body thinks I'm dying.
Yeah.
Because the mental.
Yeah.
Is so intense.
Seriously. I mean, that's one of the things that I didn't have any, like you said, I didn't have any language about this. I actually didn't read any books about mental health or self-help or whatever you might call the genre. I was not that introspective. I mean, I had like a sense of self, obviously. And I did think about like how I felt about things. But I wasn't really like analytical about it. And I wasn't, I didn't really have like a lot of introspection until graduate school, or maybe I did, but it wasn't like crippling. I think when I got to graduate school, the process of introspection and like sort of examining things that you did or things that you feel or whatever became like crippling for me, because part of what you're learning, which you mentioned before, like we should have learned earlier, is like critical thinking, and self-directed thinking and learning. And I think the learning curve was so steep in graduate school because like you have time to learn, but you need to be like learning productively, if that makes sense, which I always found really, really hard. Like, there's like a time where you're learning and you're expected to be making mistakes. And like, that's how we always think about kids and like childhood. It's like you're learning and you're making mistakes and nobody's ever like mad about it because they know that that's part of learning. But then we get to some point when we're like adults, and even though we still know that learning is the same thing where it's full of mistakes, we expect you to either not have that many mistakes or make them really fast in a low stakes way and then get them out of the way. And never make them again.
Yes, in a very low, in a very non-embarrassing way that does not cause trouble for anybody.
Sure, else. Yeah. Like making it like, and I feel like that is something, you know, in college I learned that because the quarter system was so fast. It was like, at what point did you have to like really like critically examine anything that you were taught or like ask questions about it or kind of like tear it apart to see if you could put it back together? It's like, no. You have a quiz on Monday, bitch. Study. And then, like, get your A. Like, that's all you can do. And it's just, yeah. I mean, then graduate school, it's like to another, it's like to the next level where you have, you're learning. You know, the whole point of a research program in science is that you're asking questions and trying to investigate something that nobody has done before. So you're, like, on your own, on, like, the front lines or the edge of the field, and like people can help you, but nobody has the answers. So you're just kind of like, which is something that we're not used to. Like the grad school was the first time that I was in that position. And I really think that is unfortunate in terms of education. Like, you know, everything else prior to that, everything was spoon-fed. It was like, learn this thing and someone will ask you a question, but we already know that there's an answer to it. And you're just trying to figure out how close you can get to the right answer that is already known. But a PhD project, there is no right answer. There's no known answer, at least. And you're trying to like make a way there. It's kind of like, I would imagine it is like, you're kind of like trailblazing through like a jungle and you're trying to like leave a trail in terms of like your logic and your process that allows you to like backtrack if you make a mistake and like take another direction. But you have to learn all of that because you like really the skills that I had from college were useful, but like not in any way indicative of success in grad school. Like it's just, it's a totally different world.
Right. Gosh, Sam, it's so, it's like, how could they, I feel like maybe in like Socrates' time, this was doable. But like, yeah, like how can they put you through, you know, we went to we went to a pretty standard high school where you read the chapter, you underline a word in the chapter, and then you write the definition, and then undergrad is also kind of just regurgitating stuff. And then they're like, okay, it's time to be brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, and like, if they're, okay, it's one thing to be in that new territory, but to, for everyone to pretend like it's not happening, or for everyone to pretend like, oh, this isn't terrifying, or I've done this before.
Yeah.
In fact, I am going to try and make you feel worse because we are competing weirdly in this like weird competitive environment.
Yes. I mean, it's like you said, it's not that it's bad to be in that learning zone. I think it's such an important, there are such important skill sets that I gained from graduate school. Like I said, no regrets. But I think the part that was really hard for me was that I didn't know if anybody else was struggling in the way that I was. I didn't know, like I had all these feelings of being an imposter. And they, you know, they call it imposter syndrome, which a lot of people don't like because they're like, syndrome really makes it feel like you have some disorder. And it's really like, what is it? You're feeling like you don't belong. You're afraid I was afraid of failing. And I was afraid of being discovered as having no fucking clue what is going on. I didn't realize until like really late in the game that like a lot of people felt like this. A lot of my peers, like my graduate student peers, a lot of my like professors, a lot of people like who were ahead of me career-wise, like a lot of people felt like they didn't belong or were afraid of being found out. And I was just kind of like, what the fuck? Like, why are we not telling each other this and like making it at least easier to be in an environment where the growth edge is severe and constant? Like, why don't we help each other in that?
God, what a great statement. The growth edge is severe and constant. And that sounds very stressful and intense. Like, so yes, you would want to be in the most kind, compassionate, and gentle environment as possible. Yeah. Dang, it's just so interesting, Sam, because as you know, I work in a university and it's like, I'm always so focused on my struggles and my suffering in this position. But, you know, it's helpful to remember that, like, the professors, the students, the staff, the postdocs, the, like, they're all, like, going through some version of, like, oh my God. Like, it just, each position has its own struggles.
Yeah.
And, gosh, I'll never forget when I went to, a little student, I guess like during the worst of the pandemic, there was this like weekly kind of check-in with students and it was like led by one professor in my department. And I went to it and the students just like talked about how miserable they were the whole time, which was so great. And then the professor was like this pretty young dude, you know, he's like his first 3 years as a professor. And he was like, yeah, I'm like, God, trying to be up for tenure next year. I'm like, just like on the verge of like a total mental breakdown.
So true, Hannah. I mean, that was one of the things. Like, so I've been working at like the same university that I did my undergrad, my PhD, and now I work here. And I've also, so I've been an undergraduate student, a graduate student, a teaching assistant, a lecturer, and a staff member. And so I've kind of like seen like the whole spectrum, and everybody, I shouldn't say everybody, but like people in every group are struggling, and like, especially after the last couple of years. I mean, really. And I think I love that you went to one of those like sessions, because I think it just gives you a lot of empathy for how challenging this is for everybody, regardless.
It was so energizing. Yeah. It was so like, of course, I'm not glad that people, but just that everyone was, it was like a space where it was not like, we're all here to be fancy and impress each other. It was like, we're here to be like, I am fucking dying. And also, I hate Professor M because he wants me to do fucking boomer economics. You know what? I don't want to do boomer economics. I want to do donut economics, okay? This is a new world. I'm 22 and this will not stand. Like,
yeah, you know, I think that's
so great.
I mean, it's so great that like there's an opportunity to like have conversations like among these different groups. Because you, like you said, there's, it isn't like we want everybody to be suffering, but it's like, if y'all are suffering and I'm suffering, like we could talk about this and maybe also recognize, is it us or is it this structure? You know, like, is it the whole system? Yeah. Like if everybody is really struggling with the demands, with the isolation, with like, the competitive, like the hyper competitive environment, like, is it us? I mean, that's just the question that I have now. Like, is it really us?
Yeah.
Is it an us problem?
And my question would be, and this is, you know, yeah, and this is totally open-ended. Is, you know, could you be, like, for example, I'm thinking of, there's a couple at my department, like a married couple, and they're both professors in the same department. Uh-huh. And I'm just thinking of how, I don't know, I guess I just wonder, like, when you, if, you know, after decades of unending work, and teaching and papers and like all this stuff, are you like, oh, that was so worth it? Or are you like, you know, I probably could have taken it a little bit easier. Just like,
yeah, you know,
I don't know. Yeah, like, and I don't know, maybe, you know, some of these professors do super interesting work. Maybe they're like, oh no, that was like the soul of my life. I don't know.
Well, I think that's a great question. And like, kind of want me, I just want to say like, it's something where I think that people can be motivated for different reasons and be motivated to do different things. And I think there is a world where there are professors who are like, I'm so motivated by the work that I get to do because of like the impact that it has. And, you know, I think there's a space for people to have that and have different opinions about that. And like, that was kind of, for me, like, I loved my research. I thought it was, you know, really interesting and compelling. And I felt like it could make a difference in terms of like the work that I did, you know, is directly relevant to managing coral reefs in the face of more disturbances, both like climate related and human related. So it's like it has a value. And I think if you're able to connect with like the impact, you know, there are professors, and I'm not like going to shit on the whole field. There are people mm-hmm. who are doing research, and I have friends like this who are really motivated and really, they want to have a positive impact in the world. I think for me, mm-hmm. the reality was that I enjoyed research, but I found that for me personally, I was not able to thrive in the academic research culture. And yeah, it just wasn't, it's something where I liked research, but it wasn't the only thing that I wanted to do. And I think for at least in my field, you really need to kind of be like single focused. And that's just not me. So it was, it's not something where I have, like, I'm not going to say that I don't feel like a sense of like, damn, I wish that I was able to continue in academia, because part of me does think like that, because it would just make things a lot easier if I didn't question everything and have like little like mental spiral crises like every, you know, 3 months about like what I'm doing with my life. It would make it a lot easier if I could just focus and just like continue with one path. But what I realized during my PhD, and especially towards the end, which is why I really struggled a lot with mental health, was like, you know, I was kind of in this mode where I had all these imposter feelings where I was like, why do I feel like such like a failure? And like, I can't handle the idea of being a failure. And why do I feel like I don't belong here and that sometime they're going to figure me out? And it's like, part of it was I was in that growth space and I didn't feel like I had support, and I had a really hard time asking people for help or like letting anybody know that I was in trouble. But I also feel like part of it was I was developing and learning more about myself and realizing that academic research wasn't the path that I wanted to go on anymore. And so like the imposter feelings were like, you know, it was also me telling me, hey, this isn't what you want to be doing.
Oh my God, hold the phone. We gotta snap for this realization. And Sam, I'm just resonating so much with what you're saying, because I feel like I spent like so much time at this job that I've been in for 5 years miserable, and then so furious with myself for being miserable.
Yeah.
And like not taking that as a, just trusting that. Mm-hmm. I was like, you don't, what right do you have to be miserable? Like, you
seriously, God.
And I feel like, God, if only, I mean, this is just how it works, I guess, being a person. I'm like, this is humaning. Oh my God. That's what we're going to call this episode. if I had the skills now that I have now from being in this job for 5 years, I feel it would be so different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know?
I just learned the other day for the first time that you can only do so many projects at once. Like, like this whole time I've been at this job, like struggling so much. And I realized so much of it was because I had this idea. Whenever anybody emails me or asks me for anything, I have to say absolutely yes right away. And, partially I'm going to blame that on my position, but, like, it might have been a completely different experience if I had had the wherewithal to say, actually, I already have 3 projects going on right now. I'll get to that when I can. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be a little bit, and you're going to have to wait.
I mean,
anyways.
I think that's such a good, that's a good realization, you know, that if you had the skills now, 5 years ago, you wouldn't have had the same experience. And it's like, well, duh. Like, I think we're all in that like moment where we have to pause. Like, I even had my PhD advisor once when I was just like, I'm really struggling. I don't really know what I'm doing with my research, and I don't know how to do any of this stuff. And he was like, whoa, pause. If you already knew how to do a PhD, you wouldn't be doing this, you know, like this is you learning right now.
It's so
and
true.
I'm like, oh yeah, like that's what we're supposed, like you forget that we're here having a learning experience. And I think for me, the struggle was having a learning experience in this like environment that for me was just hyper competitive and like really isolating. And I cannot learn in that environment. And that was a realization that I had, like, you can't really learn well when you're afraid. Like when you're scared. Yay! And when you
can't really learn well when you're afraid. No. Sam, this is a time to take a little break and then maybe we'll be back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we are back, again. Oh my gosh, Sam. This is such a beautiful story.
Oh my gosh, Hannah, it's so good. Because I feel like you know, like, a lot of the pieces of this. Because I will say, like, the last couple years of my PhD were so hard mentally. And my natural, I guess my inclination, at some point I learned that you should never tell anybody when you're struggling, because then it can be used against you. Like, I have this weird, like, mindset of, like, you can never tell anybody when you're struggling. And I always feel like I would listen and support other people when they were struggling, but I had somewhere along the line learned that I needed to not talk about my own struggle and pain with people. And it probably came from, I think it was probably like third grade when I like told somebody, seriously, I think it's like third grade when I told somebody like, oh, I really like this kid. And then they told everybody in the school and I was like, okay, this shows me that humans can't be trusted. Got it. Nailed it. Done.
Sammy Davis, you are not, I mean, being shamed publicly, especially as a child in school by many people, that is a definitive experience.
It is.
Like, it's a miracle any of us have gone this far.
I mean,
like,
for sure.
That is not something that will just like, oh, brush that one off.
No, I mean, those are core memories. And so I think, like, for me, it really created this environment, which I never examined until graduate school, but I never like told anybody if I was having a hard time. I always tried to like make it seem like, oh, I'm good. Try to like, you know, be like a Pollyanna, or like just, you know, smile and like move through it and be like kind of positive. And then like literally my brain just cracked in like the last couple years of grad school. So I had to just tell people like I'm really struggling. And I didn't tell everybody everything, but I remember coming to you and like having some, this is like when we both sort of came together with our like shared, you know, our separate experiences of like struggling with mental health. And like, we kind of like came together to share it, which was like in the last couple of years, but those were the worst years. I mean, really, like, I have had an amazing life. And so those saying that those are the two worst years of my life is like, you know, in the grand scheme, it's like not the worst in the realm of human experience. But for me, those were like the hardest 2 years, or the last couple of years of my PhD, just mentally exhausting. Like, my mind was just constantly in a loop of you're terrible, you're a failure, you're worthless, just playing like all day, every day.
Yeah.
All day, every day.
And yeah, dude, you were getting dual PhDs. You were getting a PhD in this one thing and then a PhD in Sammy Davis.
Yeah, that's true.
Who is Sammy Davis?
That's right.
That's incredibly, incredibly challenging.
Fact. And I also was like, I mean, it was just like a challenging, it was a hard time to be just going through a lot, like you said. Like, it was like trying to be making an advance in a science field, but also coming against like my own limitations and like trying to grow in both of these areas was just like, I mean, it was horrible. Like, you know, I'm just gonna say it was horrible. It was horrible. Yes.
And I'm sure it was also very uplifting to be on the in the discussions of climate crisis and like, I'm sure, like,
I mean, that was,
everything
that was
that's happening
really,
to our oceans.
That was really challenging too. I mean, we kind of have like my friends and I who are in the field, like coral reef ecology, we kind of like joke, we have like dark humor because, you know, at some level we're kind of like chronicling the demise of the ecosystem. And it's not all doom and gloom. Like, there are, you know, there are some bright spots, but a lot of it is really like, that gets depressing as well. Like, to just be constantly, like, we're going to conferences, we're presenting our research, and like everything ends with like, or starts with like, you know, in facing the future of climate change and like damage to reefs caused by humans. So like, you know, that's how it starts. And how it ends is like, we need to really get it together and really like make some changes. Otherwise, these reefs are not coming back. And it's like just a constant sense of that was also.
And yeah. And then depressing. Simultaneously in the news, Elon Musk makes a Bluetooth chess set and sends it into space. And the cost was $5 trillion. Good job, America.
America, number one.
Well, oh my goodness, Sam, I just could listen to you talk all day.
I know. I mean, we do. We have.
Yeah, we do. We have. Sam, what would you tell the little people born in, say, 2000, the year 2000, Jesus.
Yeah.
Or perhaps even 2002. Yeah. That's a thing. Those people are 20.
No, those students are in my classes, God. Hannah. Yeah, in my classes. And I'll be like, remember when you had AOL Instant Messenger? And they're like, what? I'm like, what do you mean, what? Look at me like
Sam,
that.
Oh my gosh. Okay, this is like going off topic a little bit, but I want to ask you, what advice you would give to your 22-year-old self, but also, are there actual, like, quantifiable differences in your students, your undergraduate students, and like us as undergraduates?
Oh gosh!
And I'm not saying like quality of work, I don't know, just how they look at things or how they solve problems or approach the subject or whatever.
I mean, so first I'm going to answer the second question and then I'm going to answer the first one. So second question.
Yeah.
Are there quantifiable differences? So I have not conducted any studies. So I have no quantifiable data that I am relying on. This is anecdotal data based on my experience. And I have, like, I think I was saying,
anecdotal
area. So the anecdotal data is, like, I've been at UCSB for a long time. I've been there since I was a freshman with, like, little breaks. But really, since 2004, I've been at the school. And, 2004. And now it's 2022. So there's actually been like a whole new generation of human beings. So it's like I watched kind of the end of the millennials in there. But now it's like it's a different group of people. It's like a different group that has had different cultural and like, you know, formative experiences. So I definitely have noticed there are a variety of differences. Like, I think one of the biggest things, that's a negative, that is something, it's hard to tease out how much like the pandemic affected this, but I feel like the students have been really thrown into that meat grinder we were talking about of like in their high school experiences, they're structured to the neck with like taking these classes, doing all this extracurriculars, being part of every single club. Like, I had students applying for like a research program who, you know, they were already part of startups. Like, they had already worked in a startup at like age 17. Yes.
Oh my God.
And they've taken, you know, 10 AP classes. And I'm like, so you think, okay, wow, they have so many opportunities and they're really like taking advantage and they're really going to benefit from these. But I think like when I talk to them, it seems like they're so focused on these sort of external like indicators of success. Like, have they taken the right classes? Did they go to that fancy internship? Blah, blah, blah. That I just sense that like they're even more lost than we were in terms of like being farther away from like what it is that interests them, that motivates them. Like, I know a lot of students, and I'm not saying this is their fault. Like, they're going to college in right before a depression. We're about to have a depression. And like they're picking, and we had a recession like right after we graduated, but like people are picking majors based off of like, okay, what's going to get me money. And I think that's important to consider for sure. But it's like, in your lifetime, happiness and like enjoyment is also something to consider. And I worry about this.
Indeed. Now there are people in your life who are going to say, no, it's not, but you got to just trust us. On
yeah. I mean, There's going to be some trade-offs. And I'm not going to say like you shouldn't major in what you want to major because it doesn't make any money, or that you should pick an engineering major or whatever because it makes a bunch of money. I just think that I just feel like there's a lot of students who have been doing what people tell them to do. Like, do all these classes because whatever. Take these extracurriculars because whatever. And then they like chug their way to college and they have these amazing resumes. Like, I'm looking at these resumes of 18-year-olds and I'm just like, I have not done a fraction of that. And I have a whole ass PhD. I mean, really, like, really, they're coming in here and I'm like, God, y'all are EMTs and like wilderness certified, like instructors and like just everything, like anything. And they've ticked all these boxes because somebody told them to tick all the boxes. But then you get in the class with them and they're just like they have no internal like thing that motivates them. It's just
so they seem kind of without passion, maybe. Like, they're kind of like, I'm here.
I mean, I think it's in there, but they've been so much on that track, and the track is even crazier than it was when we were in high school. And it's just
plus they grew up with social media.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Which I honestly cannot think of a worse thing.
I'm so sorry, y'all. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Because it's kind of like, because what do you need? This, you know, in order to, I feel like, to connect with yourself, you need space and you need some quiet, like some silence. And like, social media is the opposite of space and silence. It is like, It's like, let me just walk down this street and look in all these windows to see what everyone else is doing. And then I can see, well, how I'm doing compared to them. And like, so it doesn't surprise me for you to say, Sam, like, yeah, this generation is like more lost than ever, because social media is like, its function is for you to lose yourself. Yeah. Like, that's, it has nothing to do with the reality you live in, with your waking body and mind. It's like, it's just so bonkers.
It is. And I do think it's bonkle like area.
It's a little bonkers.
I do feel that these kids who have like grown up with social media, I really feel like we just like narrowly escaped that. Cause I just really feel for it. And I read once like this article that was talking about how, you know, when we all had, probably everybody growing up has an experience where something happens at school and either you say something that offends somebody or they say something that hurts your feelings or whatever. And then like, you know, you go home and you like kind of mope about it or think about it like all weekend. And then like, you know, on Monday you go back and you kind of have an idea of like how you're going to talk to them. But you have like space to like reflect on the thing that happened and like think about like how you felt about it, sort of integrate it and like go and then figure out what you're going to do. But the article was saying that now there's no space to process this. It's like what you were saying, all of it comes home with you. So like, somebody makes fun of you at school, you go home, literally you get online and it's still going on. Like, it's still there, or people are talking about it. It's like, there's no space for you to escape it, to reflect on it, to think about it, to like, you know, work your way through it. It's just a constant thing. And I do not pretend to be an expert on that at all, but I do feel like, I think that can only be like a negative in terms of the mental health and the development of people today. And it's so interesting. Cause like, yeah, I mean, I've been teaching, or I've been at a university for so long that like, I'm able to see like when I started, like sort of teaching, it was, or when I started like, being a graduate student, I was working with people who were like my generation and like teaching in that capacity. So it was like people who grew up without the internet, really. Like, Facebook started when we were freshmen in college. And then now I'm all the way at the other side, where the students that I have now were born in like 2000, 2001, for the most part. And so they grew up and like, Facebook was around when they were 4 years old. So it's like, they had it probably when they were in elementary school, middle school. I mean, and that's, to me, there's a lot in there. And it's not just, you know, it's not just social media. There's a lot of like things that have changed culturally and like structurally since we were kids, and these kids are. But anyway, I think the things that I've noticed is that I really feel like they've gotten really good. The students now have gotten really good at like checking the boxes and like making themselves look really good on paper. But then when you talk to them or you ask them like what it is that they want to do, or you ask them to like integrate that stuff. Like, for example, they have all the experience like writing for their high school newspapers. Or you're like, okay, like write this thing and like critically examine this topic. It's like, no, it's like the depth. It's like they have a breadth, but not a depth. And this is not like my experience for every single person, but it's something that I've started to notice.
Gosh, yes. Interesting. Well, because, yeah, depth takes space and time, and it's slow. Mm-hmm. And I feel like even with myself, I have to remind myself, like, especially right now, I'm like in this life transition. Like yesterday, I just had such a rough day. I was like, Hannah Gelb, like, fix your life. Hello. Come on, let's go. It's already 3 p.m. You haven't fixed your life? Like,
Hannah, I'm slacking.
Like, I have to be like, no, it doesn't. Life is not a like a social media feed. Like, it's not just like boom, 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 boom. Yep. Like, it's slow and frustrating.
And non-linear.
But that's how it's, yeah, and non-linear. And that's okay.
Yeah.
And then the culture at the same time, it's like, actually, you're wrong.
You should have figured this out 3 years ago. Like, okay, great.
And it should be like pretty tidy, like kind of just all up in a box, you know, like bam, 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 bam. To conclude, I don't know how anyone is functioning. And my dear friend, Sam, we are going to have to stop because we've been talking for almost an hour and a half.
I know. I mean, we could really talk forever.
We might have to make this a two-parter. Or you know what, Sam? We're just going to have to come back because you are delightful and I like you. And you have great things to say.
I want to come back. Anytime you guys want me to come back, I want to come back.
Joy! Well, guys, earbuds, thank you so much for listening. And as you know, you can find me and the podcast on Hanalyze Pod at Twitter and Instagram. And you can also become a patron of this podcast at patreon.com/hanalyzethis. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month. That is less than a chai latte.
Oh my God.
At a local coffee shop
really
in my
is.
Neighborhood.
I mean, you can, inflation is crazy. Inflation's crazy.
Speaking of students and college, like, okay, when I started college, a cup of coffee was like $1.25.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyways, Sam, if people want to know more about you or follow you on the social medias that we just disparaged a little bit.
Okay.
What? where can they find more info about you? Or just talk to you.
Tuckles to me. So the first thing I have to say is I have a very complicated relationship with social media. And I'm not sure how to be on social media, y'all, like without losing my mind. I'm not sure how to do it. So I don't have a personal social media account to share, but I do want to share, after graduate school, some friends who are in the field that I am in and also in other scientific fields, started a science outreach, nonprofit. And we have talked about a lot of the topics that Hannah and I discussed today, and especially related to graduate school and deciding whether it's a good fit for you and mental health in graduate school, as well as the cool science that we do. So we have a really diverse group of scientists, and I would love for you all to check us out. We are at sciall.org, sciall.org. Which stands for Science for All. And you will see yours truly there. I'm in a few of the videos, but we've got like a really great group. So it's not just me talking about my experience, but there's a lot of different experiences and I would love for you to check it out.
Oh, wonderful. And I will for sure put that link on our social medias so you can all see it. That sounds awesome, dude.
You should put the link. And then if you want to email me, I do have an email address. It's contact@sammydavis.net. And if you go to sammydavis.net, you'll see I'm incredibly delinquent on like actually updating the website, but you can email me. And I would love to talk to anybody about Lord of the Rings or graduate school or any of the topics that we discussed today, except Johnny Depp.
Sam, it has been such a delight to have you, and I'm so excited to continue being your friend for the rest of my life. So thank you very much, and earbuds, we will see you next time.
Bye, earbuds. Bye. We love you.